You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Yeah, so I was out for the last few weeks, and it's actually wonderful to see this many people here. There's like 16 families on vacation, and I'm not going to take it personal because I was told that last week when I wasn't teaching, this room was packed, and then this week I'm teaching. Okay, whatever. No, that's obviously vacations are a wonderful time to take a break. But one of the things, speaking of break, that we've got going on is our Ignition elementary, kindergarten through fifth grade. Which typically they are learning the exact same thing that we are, so that as parents you can come alongside of your kids and help disciple them, raise them to know Jesus more. But those teachers are having a break this month, and so I'm going to ask the Ignition kids to come up on stage because I need your help. So if you are in that Ignition grade, I count three of you. I need everybody. I have an activity for nine, so I need all of you up here. Come on, boys. Come on, boys. I need you. Thank you. Thank you. Tell them we need you. Good. There we go. All right. Excellent. Excellent. All right. So I've got a microphone here it's on. Okay. So just tell us your first name.
Michaela.
Oh, sorry. I should hold it into your face. Tell us your name. Here. Tell us your name. All right. First name.
Beckett.
All right. And?
Gibson.
All right. So Michaela, Beckett, and Gibson. Good. Okay. Now, I'm going to need your help with something here. And I'm going to give you each a thing to hold up, and then I'm going to give you – actually, you know what? I'll give you each – here. So just take that for a second. Don't show them yet. Take that for a second. Take that one. Don't show anybody yet. Okay. And then we'll start that way. Okay. Then I'll – okay. Put this one behind that one. Okay. Put this one behind that one. Pretend that you're nine people. Okay. All right. Put that one behind that one. Put that one behind that one. Okay, put that one behind that one. All right, put that one behind that one. Put that one behind that one. Okay, all right, good. Now, you're going to hold, okay, now you can turn and face the audience. If you guys move forward a little bit, I think there's a view that maybe we'll get these guys on this camera or whatever, so you can do that. So what I want to do is, you can hold yours down. We're going to start with Michaela's here first. Okay, so, first of all, can you see what that says? This says, Saved by the Bell, all right? My question for you, it should be on the screen, there we go. What does that mean? Wait, oh, I need your mic. Sorry. What do you think Saved by the Bell means?
You're saving the bell?
You're saving a bell. Because, like, yeah, you don't want that bell to, you know, die. So you're saving it. Okay. All right. So just hold that up for everyone to see that. So Saved by the Bell, that's actually not how it's used. It typically means as, you know, does someone want to just get, what does it mean to be saved by the bell? In a metaphorical sense. Yeah, just you got it at the last minute. Right, yeah, you're saved by the bell. The last second it came through. So that's a phrase that is used. But did you know the history of that word? The meaning behind that phrase comes from the Middle Ages during the bubonic plague when people were dying, the Black Death. People were dying so much. And if you saw Monty Python, which is and the Holy Grail, which is a totally accurate depiction of that, people were dying so much that they would just bring out their dead, and it's kind of gory, and they would throw them, you know, into piles, and then eventually bury them in caskets. And in case someone wasn't actually dead, but I'm not dead yet, but in case someone, boom, you are now. Anyway, in case somebody wasn't dead, they would bury them in a casket, and then have a bell above ground with a cord going down into the casket, so if someone woke up because they weren't actually dead, they could ring the bell and someone would come and dig them up and say, oh, they're not dead yet. So they would be saved by the bell. Okay? All right. Next one. You look at yours there. Break the ice. What do you think that means?
Break the ice.
You break the ice. So it means like you have ice and now it's broken. Okay. But obviously the phrase break the ice, I want to share what that means today metaphorically. Open up the conversation, get to know someone, Yeah. That's kind of what it means to break the ice, to kind of get to know them. Well, that phrase, the meaning of that originally came from a time when, you know, there wasn't really mass transit in terms of cars and automobiles and anything like that, or planes. People used boats and ships. And so if you were a town, especially in the north, and a neighboring country or nation or whatever was coming to you via ship, then if it was in the north, there might be ice out there. And so what you would do to be a welcoming country is you would send out an icebreaker, a ship that would go out there and break up the ice so that you would have a welcome path for that person to come in. And so that's the meaning behind that phrase, to break the ice, and that's why we get it to know that way. Okay, all right, what have you got for this one? What do you think that means? Mad as a Hatter.
No clue.
Okay, how many of you have ever used that phrase? It's not terribly. Okay, good. Okay, so your dad. all right. Well, good. We're all about teaching our kids. Mad as a Hatter actually is a phrase, you know, people are like, you know, we would use it today to say, oh, man, they're a little crazy. You know, they're a little cray-cray. They have one less fry in their happy meal and all that kind of stuff. But to say someone's mad as a hatter, but the phrase, and even the phrase Mad Hatter, which we know from Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland. Have you read Alice in Wonderland, anybody? You watched the movie Alice in Wonderland? Have you watched the other movie, Alice in Wonderland? Okay. By the way, Alice in Wonderland, the name is Alice in Wonderland. I thought that was her name growing up. Her name is Allison Wonderland. Yeah, shut up. Okay. that's what I thought. I didn't. Leave me. My mom read it to me. I just didn't read it yet. Stop judging me. People's wives. Anyway, so Mad Hatter, Mad as a Hatter, that phrase actually came from people that made hats, which I think is called a haberdashery. I believe is what a hat maker is, works at a haberdashery, maybe? Sure. Yep, we'll pretend it does. But they would use mercury for the felt on hats. And that mercury, at the time, they didn't realize that it was a poison. And so people, the hatters, tend to be a little bit crazy because they were getting a little mercury poisoning over time. And so that's where Mad as a Hatter comes. Okay, we got to go a little bit faster here, but, you know, it's not your fault, it's mine. Okay, the next one here. Put that one down. Okay, bury the hatchet. What do you think that means, to bury the hatchet?
I don't know.
You don't know. Do you know what to bury means?
To bury something?
Okay, you know what a hatchet is?
No.
Okay, it's like a little axe. It's like a mini axe. You know, like if you wanted to talk to someone, you need to ask them a question. No. Okay, not that. Okay, so bury the hatchet. What does that mean today, peoples? Hide the murder weapon. Okay, don't listen to her. What does it mean? What? Squash the beef? Make peace. Yeah, let's bury the hatchet, which always seemed like a really unpeaceful kind of thing to say. Like, are you burying that in my head? Or in my neck. But to bury the hatchet, or bury the hatchet, bury, whatever. Bury the hatchet actually comes from a Native American peace talks. And whenever they would make peace, to be clear of their intentions, they would literally bury all of their hatchets to prove that, no, we have no intentions, there's no ill intent, there's no danger here. We are here to make peace because we can't even hatchet you. Okay, so the next one here, you can drop that one. Yeah, what have we got here? Give a cold shoulder. What do you think that means?
I don't know.
Give us an idea. Give us a guess.
Give a cold shoulder to someone?
Like physically? Like your shoulder is cold? Or like, this is my warm shoulder and this is my cold shoulder? Okay, yeah, that would kind of work. What does it mean to give a cold shoulder? To ignore someone, yeah, to blow them off. And that phrase actually came from at some point, at some time, someplace back in the day. But the idea was that if you were welcoming a guest, you would give them, you know, the best cut of meat, and you would be nice and warm and say, welcome to my home. But if you were kind of tired of them being there, you wouldn't give them the best cut of beef. You would give them the shoulder portion, and it typically would not be heated. And so to give someone the cold shoulder was sort of a sign to say, you know what, your time has passed. You are no longer welcome here. It's time to move on. So that phrase, give a cold shoulder, meant to literally give someone a cold shoulder of mutton. Okay, you can drop that one. That's what we've got here. All right, go the whole 9 yards. That's what yours says. What do you think that one is?
You just run 9 yards.
You run 9 yards, right. But excellent. Is 9 yards enough? I mean, what would be better, to run the whole 10 yards, right? First down? Yeah, football season, come in. All right, but to go the whole 9 yards, and that phrase, what does it mean? What do we use that phrase today? To go the whole way, Yeah, to go to completion, to go to the end. You went the whole nine yards. That phrase, actually, the meaning behind that comes from World War II fighter planes and the amount of ammunition, bullets, that they had in their, what do you call that? Their bullet place. In their shoot thingy. Yeah, there were 9 yards of ammunition. And so to say that they went the whole 9 yards means they used every bullet on their plane so that that was all of it. So they gave everything they had. And, of course, that's where that phrase comes from. Okay, we're doing great here. How about to drop that one next? Last one. Let the cat out of the bag. What do you think that means?
Letting the cat out of the bag.
Why is the cat in the bag?
It jumped in there.
It jumped in there. Okay, so the cat is coming out of the bag because it jumped in there and you want to let it out. What does that phrase mean in our common usage today? Let out a secret. Yeah, give up a secret. That phrase historically came from if you were going to market and you wanted to buy, let's say, a pig, a little piggy that you wanted to raise to eat, an unscrupulous or sneaky marketer would say, hey, isn't this a fine piece of meat? Look at this wonderful piggy. And you know, you would have all the parts, the shoulder and the cold shoulder. And then they would say, okay, let me wrap that up for you. And then they'd go back here, and instead of the piggy, they'd throw a cat in there because nobody cares about cats because they're worthless. Huh? And it would tie that up, and then they would give you that thing, and you would see, like, oh, yeah, look at that. That clearly is a pig. You know, doing all that, because pigs sound like that. But anyway, maybe they were deaf back then. But they would say, oh, no, okay, I, you know, you would walk home going, I guess I got my pig. I got what I paid for. But if you were to open it and let the cat out of the bag, you would divulge that there was a secret there, that they were trying to cover up something, and you would let them... You know, you wouldn't let them get away with it. You would let the cat out of the bag. Okay, how about the next one here? We're doing great. Go ahead. What have we got here? Okay, turn a blind eye.
You turn a blind eye, I guess?
What, would you like turn it in your head?
Maybe.
Okay. What does it mean to turn a blind eye? Ignore. Yeah, to ignore something. And I should get the guy's name right. This actually comes from the British Navy. Horatio Nelson, Admiral Horatio Nelson, a well-known naval admiral back in the time of British admirals, you know. And one of the there was this a battle where the British Navy or the British command sent signals, you know, through semaphore or smoke or whatever they did, and the signal was to not attack this particular town, this particular area. And Horatio did not want to do that. And it turns out, historically, like in truth, he actually was blind in one eye. And so what he did is he took his telescope where he would look at the signal, and he put it to his blind eye. He turned it to his blind eye and said, I don't see any command, and went ahead and attacked. And he ended up winning the battle. But now they're like, yay, you! But it was kind of like he actually ignored the command because he turned his blind eye toward the command, and that's why it means to ignore something. And then finally, we've got one more here. What have we got? What is this one? Barking up the wrong tree. What do you think that means?
Cutting down a tree, the wrong tree.
Okay, what's doing the barking? Is it you climbing up a wrong tree?
No clue.
No clue. All right. Is it like you're trying to get the bark off of the tree?
Probably.
You're going to get the bark off of the tree, but it's the wrong tree, of course. So what does that phrase mean today in usage? What's that? You're looking in the wrong spot. What other things? You're on the wrong path, you know. Yeah, one metaphor to describe it. But to say you're barking up the wrong tree means like, yeah, you're heading in the wrong direction. You're barking up the wrong tree. And, of course, that phrase comes from hunting back when, and I guess they still do this today, when dogs would be used to go coon hunting, hounds would be used. And, of course, they would chase the raccoon or whatever they were hunting if they were climbing trees, not deer. Deer did not climb, still don't climb trees, believe it or not. And I know these things because I am a professional hunterer. I know how to do all the huntering. So they would let the dogs out. Who let the dogs out? Okay. The dogs would then, if there was a raccoon, but then let's say the raccoon jumped over to a different tree, but the dogs would still be barking at the base of that tree, but the raccoon or the animal is no longer there. Those dogs would be barking up the wrong tree. So thank you guys very much. You can just throw them there. Why don't we give them a hand? I'm going to bring you back in a moment. in a little bit so we can keep you, you know. But the idea of these phrases we use all the time, and maybe when you know the meaning behind them, it changes things a little bit. And, you know, you could Google those kind of things and find all sorts of interesting facts. There we go. You know, and one of the other things that when it comes to knowing the meaning, it sometimes affects our understanding of something. A lot of times rules, no, not a lot of times, almost all the time, a rule or a law existed for a particular purpose. There was a reason behind it. And, you know, and depending on what that reason is, and there's, you know, I can tell you all sorts of stories about different things. One story I've shared before was this idea of, that there was this mom teaching her daughter how to make meatloaf. And again, I've shared this before, and you're like, I know that story. That's okay. Just be quiet and pay attention. It'll make me feel good. And so this mom was making meatloaf, and she showed her daughter how to make meatloaf and said, okay, the first thing you do is you shape it into the thing, you know, and then when you get to it, or maybe it was a ham, you cut off the ends and set the ends aside, and then you put it in the oven and cook it, and there you go. And the daughter was like, well, Mom, why do we do that? Why do we do it like that? Well, because that's how my mom taught me. So they said, okay, well, let's go ask Grandma. And so they went to Grandma and said, Grandma, you know, tell us how to make a meatloaf or a ham or whatever in the world, as long as it's not a cat, because you got your cat out of the bag, and it's not a cold shoulder. But anyway, the Grandma was like, oh, okay, yeah, you cut the ends off and put them aside. She's like, well, that's the way my mom told me. And so they were like, well, let's go talk to Great-Grandmama. And so they went to Great-Grandmama, and she's like, oh, yes, I remember that, and that's how you make it, because that's what she sounds like. And that's how you make it, and you cut the ends off. And they're like, well, why did you cut the ends off? She's like, well, because my pan was only this big, and I couldn't fit the rest of the meatloaf in there. And so all along, there was this rule that had no particular meaning or understanding, because Great-Grandmama's pan just wasn't big enough to fit the whole thing. That's why the ends were cut off when everyone else didn't need to cut the ends off. But sometimes understanding the meaning behind something, like even speed limits. You know, the reason a speed limit is posted on a road the way it is because there's engineers that understand the cant, which the angle of the road, because actually most roads are angled, and curves that are faster curves are actually angled even more. And, of course, you probably know this if you ever watched a NASCAR race and the banking of the curve. And if you ever have the chance to go on a racetrack, one of those NASCAR tracks on a tour or something like that, it is incredible the pitch that you are on. I got to ride on the Daytona track years ago, back when my NASCAR driving days. I did ride on the track, but I wasn't a NASCAR driver. Anyway, why am I saying that? Oh, so there's a reason, and understanding the meaning behind things often will make things make more sense. Unfortunately, when it comes to us, when we look at ourselves, right? Your reasons behind something, like you might go, well, that's a dumb rule. I'm not going to follow that rule. That's a dumb law. I'm not going to obey that law. That's a dumb phrase. That doesn't make any sense. But when it comes to your own reasons behind things, your own meaning behind things, your reasons are always good enough. Your reasons are always right. My reasons are always right. My reasons are always good enough. And this idea of saying, okay, what is the reason behind why I'm acting the way I'm acting? What is the meaning behind why I'm doing what I'm doing? And in my own mind, in my own reflection, my reason is good. The problem is, and this is pretty obvious stuff, that if you become your own standard, it becomes a loop. And you might have heard the phrase echo chamber. People talk about that. You know, you get all the people that agree with the same thing and say the same thing over and over, and it's just an echo chamber because it's the same thing bouncing around and around and around. But when you make yourself your own standard, it creates a loop, often called a feedback loop. And the reason feedback exists as feedback is because the sound, have you ever heard that awful sound? Let's see, what does that sound sound like? Maybe something like, let's see if I can do it. I can't even reach that one. I'm not tall enough. Justin, I need you to be tall. Oh, there we go. Ooh, there we go. Zach's not here, so I can do stuff. But a feedback loop, I don't know if you ever noticed it, but when you hear that sound, it's because the microphone is picking up the sound that the microphone is making, and it starts going into a loop, and then you go, and it makes that horrible sound because it becomes its own echo chamber, and it's a horrible sound. And if we become our own standard for what is right and why we do what we do, it makes a horrible sound. And if you're old like me, you may remember back in the day when, you know, like, I don't know if wall-to-wall sound, listening booth, or some of these stores, Best Buy, Circuit City, maybe they were around. Best Buy was a little newer. But they would have these cameras mounted like on the display things, and then the TV behind it, video cameras, and the TV behind it, and you could go up and make faces, and you'd see yourself on the TV. But if you ever turned the camera towards the TV, it would do this like forever spiral, and it was mesmerizing because it was feedback. My point is this, after 20 minutes of talking, that if we become our own standard and our own reasons for why we do what we do, which are always right, it creates a horrible sound. And we've been going through this series. I had three of the elders last month taught for me, taught together as we're going through this series on Proverbs. And this is our second runaround. We did a first Wise Up. This is Wise Up again. And as we said the very first week, and we've been talking all series long, Proverbs are just simply statements that are true to life, that are observations of life going, okay, that's interesting. And there's some things that we can learn, some principles that we can take away from Proverbs. And the proverb that we're going to look at today, I want you to get this as the point. I want you to understand this is the concept that we're learning in this proverb. And that is that we should wise up and look within. Wise up and look within. Because if we just kind of live our life and do our thing and have our reasons as our own standard isn't always going to be the best. And the reason behind what we do is often at fault. And what I'm saying is this. We do things. Why did you do that? Why did you say that to them? And as I listen to you say that, or your friend or your wife or whatever hears you say that, they might say, well, that was a horrible thing. Why would you say something like that to them? But in your mind, you're going, well, here's the reason. There's a really good reason. They did this to me once. They said this to me once. This happened, and we have this idea that our own standards are okay. Or maybe even just simply showing up at church. Why are you here today? Why are you watching online? Well, because this past week I did something bad, and I feel like if I show up, I don't know, maybe God will be cool with me now. And the reasons behind why we do what we do become the issue. And so we need to, instead of just doing it, we need to actually wise up and look within and say, what is the reason that I'm doing what I'm doing? Why am I living this way or doing this action or speaking this way to them or whatever? And say, looking within and saying, really, why am I doing this? And that's what we're looking at here in Proverbs chapter 16. So we're finally hitting the Bible this morning. In Proverbs 16, verses 1 to 3, if you have the YouVersion app, you can just scroll to Proverbs, which is about a third down the list of all the Bible books. And we're going to be in 16, which if you scroll past 15, you're there. If you get to 17, you're too far. But we're looking at these first three verses of Proverbs in Proverbs chapter 16. And the writer of Proverbs says this, we can make our own plans, but the Lord gives the right answer. People may be pure in their own eyes, but the Lord examines their motives. Commit your actions to the Lord, and your plans will succeed. And Jack read the second two verses there, verses 2 and 3. But I thought this was interesting. Many of the Proverbs, many of them, not all of them, are kind of individual thoughts. And you'll see, like Proverbs 31, that's not an individual thought. It's one continuous thought. And the proverb that Justin taught last week, if you read the whole thing, that's a continuous thought. But these, most of them are individual, but there's like a little triplet of these three proverbs. And at first they seem independent, but as you look closer, you're like, wait a second, these all fit together. And they come back to this idea of motives and looking in and saying, why am I doing what I'm doing? What is the meaning behind why I'm doing what I'm doing? And so I want to break this passage down a little bit and talk about the meaning behind our movement. Like, what you do is one thing. But why you do it is actually more important. And sometimes, and let me just flip this around, sometimes you might do a mean thing or a wrong thing, let's say, and your motive says, well, they deserve that because. But sometimes the opposite is true. We'll do a good thing, but our motives are totally impure. We might be extra nice to our boss, not because Jesus says to love everyone. No, because we know if we're nice to them, we might get a raise. Is that the correct motive? Is that the correct meaning behind why we're doing what we're doing? And so we need to look within and say, what is the meaning behind our movement? What is behind what we are doing? And so there's a couple of things that we can see in this verse. The first thing, or this passage, the first thing is that you can't outplan God. You can't do anything, and God's like, oh, I didn't see that coming. Oh, bummer. He snuck that one by me. You cannot outplan God. God is completely sovereign. He is completely and totally in control. But the first part of the passage says this in verse 1. The writer says, We can make our own plans, but the Lord gives the right answer. And so this is the NLT. The NIV says something about the Lord controls the actions of the tongue. And the issue with this verse is that, you know, as much as we plan, as much as we have, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to accomplish. This is my motive. This is the thing that I want to do. God is still completely in control. And so we might think, oh, I'm going to do this. And maybe if I do it this way, this will get me what I want. Maybe if I'm nice to my boss, I'll get the raise. Maybe if I do that thing, then that'll turn out good. Maybe if I show up in church next week, I'll win the lottery. Maybe if I read my Bible today, then the rest of my day will go really well. And we have these things. And again, is there anything wrong with going to church? No. Is there anything wrong with reading your Bible? No. Is there anything wrong with being nice to people? Absolutely not. But the motives are the issue here. And what the verse 1 here is saying is that, you know, as much as you do, you can't sneak around God. You can't get beyond Him and His control. He is always going to do things the right way. He is always going to make things turn out the right way. And so the interesting thing about this is that we do this thing where we're like, oh, I read my Bible today. How come that guy cut me off in traffic? God, you owe me. Like, oh, no, wait a second. That's not how this works. And we get mad at God because, you know, we did according to our standard, this thing happened. I went to church 4 weeks in a row. You know, how come that nice thing didn't happen for me? Why did my oven break and my dishwasher and my fridge all in the same day? Well, God, you know, come on, you owe me. And our motives behind all those things aren't because we love God, aren't because we want to honor Him, but because we want to get something. And that's where the motives come in. And the writer is saying, look, you can make all your plans, but God's plans are always going to come through. The Lord gives the right answer. He is always in charge. And over in James chapter 16, which actually was very appropriate. I don't know what it was like when you got in here, but when we were coming in around 8:30, there was a huge mist, fog hanging over the area. It's really wild because you can kind of see where the river is just by where the fog is and the clouds are. And James says the same kind of thing this way. He says, look here. You people who say, today or tomorrow, we're going to go to a certain town and we'll stay there a year. We'll do business there and make a profit. He says, like, you're like, oh, here's what I'm going to do. Here's my plan. I got it all figured out. Here's what's going to happen. He says, how do you know what your life will be like tomorrow? Your life is like the morning fog. It's here a little while and then it's gone. And again, if we go out right now, I'm sure that fog is gone. But he says, that's what our life is like. Like, we think we've got these plans and this is what I'm going to do. And he's like, no. God is the one in control. Tomorrow, like in the next 10 minutes, you could instantly die. This roof could collapse. You could have a heart attack, whatever. And so to have that attitude saying, well, I've got my plans. I'm doing things my way. James says, it's like it's a morning fog. Here a little while and gone. He says, what you ought to say is that if the Lord wants us to, we will live and do this or that. The NIV, this is the NLT, the NIV says, if it's the Lord's will. And he says, what we should be doing, he says, otherwise you're boasting about your own pretentious plans and all such boasting is evil. He says, if we really want to recognize how we live our lives and our motives and the reasons behind, like, don't go like, this is my plan and God, you better get on board. Like, you need to recognize that even the breath that you just took and that beat of your heart that you just beaten, that was from God. And that everything is from Him. And so before we start saying, oh, I got my plans and I'm going to make God work my way and manipulate God, we just need to remember, like, no, God's the one in control completely. And this matters for the next part of this, but to understand that you can't outplan God. You can't get beyond Him. Your plan is not going to change Him. He is always going to be in control. So if you can't outplan God, then the second thing he says here in verse 2 is that you can't mislead God. And I should clarify, you can mislead people. You can easily mislead people. We can look at someone and you know, just you look at that, wow, what a wonderful thing that you did. That was so nice that you did that. you know, well, I had to because there was someone here with a gun making me do it. Like, you know, you don't know what's going on, but you can look at someone the outward appearance and say, wow, you know, you're doing a great job. But the writer of Proverbs here says that you can't mislead God. He says people may be pure in their own eyes, but the Lord examines their motives. And this is where we get into this idea of looking within. And like how quick we are to justify our actions, to justify why we do what we do, to justify what we said to them. Or again, in the opposite side of that, we're so quick to do something good and expect God to come through or this to work out that way. And none of those are from the right motives. And if you've heard this before, I've said this, you know, our 26th wedding anniversary was 2 days ago, July 31st. Did you show my picture, our picture on there? Yeah, so you saw us in our wedding back when I had hair. And but you know, if I came to Kendra and was like, hey, Kendra, I bought you these flowers, she would love them because she's like, you don't buy me flowers. My daughter's boyfriend buys her flowers. But anyway, sorry, we'll deal with that later. But if I was like, yeah, I had to. Michael got Aletheia some, so I had to do this. Like, I don't think she would go, oh, that's wonderful. She would go, well, I don't want your flowers. I want your actions, your motives. I want your heart behind it. I just did it because I had to. Because I had to, you know, couldn't have her boyfriend get one up on me. Now I can't get her flowers. Like, what are you doing that? Just account Michael, every time Michael gets flowers for Aletheia, Sean gets flowers for Kendra. Anyway, Michael, if you ever happen to watch this someday, I'm watching you. Anyway, you know what I'm saying, the motives, the issue of what behind it, and we might be pure in our own eyes, but God knows why you're doing what you're doing. God knows why I'm doing what I'm doing. He understands the deep motives. And again, the way verse 2 says, people may be pure in their own eyes. In your own eyes, what you're doing looks right. In your own eyes, what you're doing looks good. Because if it didn't, we wouldn't do it. You know, again, unless you're forced to do it by gunpoint, or unless your boss makes you do something, or whatever, but, you know, your parents tell you you better take out the trash. But for our own, when we do something on our own, if it doesn't look good in our own eyes, we're not going to do it. And so we are deceiving ourselves. We are self-deceptive. And that's what the writer of Proverbs is saying. Look, God knows what's really going on. And so don't try to mislead God. Don't try to trick him, because he sees deep. He sees even better than you do sometimes. He sees even deeper. Over in Proverbs 14, it's written similar thought. It says, there's a way that appears to be right, but in the end it leads to death. See, there are things we're like, oh, this is right, this is good. But in the end, it leads to death. And again, this whole idea is we need to look at our motives. If we right away say, oh, that's right, this is the good reason, that's okay, and we justify, and we're so good at justifying things and determining why this is an okay reason to do the thing we probably know we shouldn't. Because we need to examine our motives. Because sometimes there's a thing that doesn't look like a bad thing, and it can lead to death. And I remember a story of when I was in high school. One of my friends was driving a car. They were on a break between, I guess it was band camp, because I was in band. And they had a carload of people, and it didn't seem like a bad idea to ride in this car with this girl. And she decided to, like, wouldn't it be funny to scare everybody in the car? And so while they're driving up this over this bridge in Delaware, that's the highest point we can get is bridges, she was like, wow, look at that. And when she did that, she flipped the car. And there was one of my friends, her name was Stephanie, her hand was out of the window, and the car rolled on her hand. She used to be a flute player. She wasn't anymore. Lost multiple fingers. Did not die. But, you know, in that idea, like, there's nothing wrong with riding with someone. Sometimes you don't really realize what you're getting into. And I'll be honest, I mean, as parents, we're like, hey, who are you going with? Where are you going and why? And because it matters. Those little things, oh, it's not a big deal. I'm just going to. Because sometimes the things that look right can be very dangerous. And so this whole idea of our motives and why we're doing what we're doing, why, what is the reason, what is the meaning behind it, it matters so much. Because it's not the what that you're doing, but the why that you're doing. And again, if you are here today because you feel guilty, that's why you have to come to church. If you're here because maybe your parents forced you, maybe you're here because you did something and you want to make it right by showing up and sitting down, and maybe God will be cool with that. And again, there's not a wrong thing with getting your kids to come to church. It's not bad. But really looking at the motives, like, why are you here? Why are you here? Why are you doing what you're doing? Why do you read your Bible, if you read your Bible? Why do you have the job that you have? Why? And looking at the motives, because you can't mislead God. God knows really why. And God knows what, in the sense that what barking up the wrong tree is and letting the cat out of the bag, we know the meaning behind that. God knows the meaning behind what we do and why we do it. So the meaning behind our movements, if the point here is that you can't outplan God and you can't mislead God, these are the two things, verse 1 and 2. There's a really interesting thing that happens. Therefore, if we now know that you can't get outside of God's plan and you can't sneak around God, then there's something maybe we can learn from this. Therefore, submit your plans and your motives to God. Therefore, submit your plans, because you can't outplan God and you can't mislead God. So what if we submit our plans, what we want to do, instead of saying, oh, this is what I'm going to do tomorrow. No, I'm going to say, God, if this is what you want me to do, then I'm going to do that tomorrow. And this is why I'm doing it, God, because I want to honor you. Submit your plans and your motives to God, and you will truly succeed. Like, there is the key. There is key, the key to, I'm not going to say happiness, because happiness sometimes means we submit to God and it doesn't go the best way, because God is doing something. He is training something in us. He is growing something. He's getting rid of something. But if we are willing to say, God, what I want to do today, I want to do what you want me to do. And God, the reason I'm doing this today is because I want to honor you, because I love you for what you have done for me. And the verse 3 of this proverb says that if you submit your plans and your motives to God, you will truly succeed. And so this is what verse 3 says here. Commit your actions to the Lord. Commit what you're doing. And this word commit is really cool. The Hebrew word for it, I got to get to that slide. The Hebrew word for it, I'll just say the actual word, because it was written in Hebrew and that was the language that they spoke when this was written. It is galal or halal, G-A-L-A-L, if you were to write it in English. And the word literally means to roll over. And so it's a really neat word when it comes to this idea of saying, I'm going to commit my plans to the Lord. I'm going to roll myself over into God. I'm just going to dive all the way in. I'm not just putting my foot in the water. I'm going to get all the way into the water. And we went to New Smyrna Beach. We go there pretty much every year for our vacation last month. And people are like, how was your vacation? I was like, it was really good. Literally in the first minute, I'm not kidding you, the first minute I walked into the ocean, I broke my toe when we got there. I'm assuming it was a 30-foot shark. That's probably what it was. Brushed by my foot. Might have been. It was definitely a 30-foot shark. It's the shark attack capital of the world. It was actually just featured on Shark Week this year, New Smyrna Beach. Awesome. Anyway, yeah, and Tommy's goal has been to get bitten once, and it hasn't happened yet, so I'm sorry. So he didn't have a good vacation because he came home with all of his limbs. But anyway, so this probably 30-foot shark was there, and I jumped back when it touched my foot and landed on my toe, this toe, and it was like totally broken. The entire toe is purple. I could show you. So if you want to see pictures of it, it is like a shade of purple I have never seen. We were in touch with Steph back and forth. Like, is he going to die? Is he going to lose his toe? And actually, that was kind of a risk. There's like this thing where like your blood can get cut off. But it's all good now. See, I can skip and dance and whatever. Anyway, what am I talking about? Okay, committing. To immerse yourself in. And so actually, it was harder for me to get into the water, because you'd be surprised. What's that? My third toe in, my middle toe, like how much you use your toes for balance. And so it was a lot harder to get into the deeper water because I needed to use it. I was like, ah, but But this word means to commit, to roll yourself in, to just immerse yourself. Give it all to God. He says when you completely immerse yourself, when you completely roll yourself into God, commit all of your actions, your plans will succeed. Well, why is that? Because God is in control and you can't outplan him and he knows your motives. And so if even it looks like you're doing the right thing on the outside, if your heart is the wrong, God's not going to honor that. And so he's saying, the writer of Proverbs here says, look, just because of these two things, give it all to God. And then everything you do will succeed. Why? Because God will make you rich? No. Because God will make you win every activity? No. Because when you are surrendering yourself, when you are rolling yourself into, when you are committing yourself to God, you're going to want the things that God wants. And you're going to start seeing things differently. And maybe the next promotion isn't the thing that God wants for you. Because maybe right where you are, God's got people around you that he wants you to serve. He wants you to share Jesus with them. And from an earthly standpoint, that'll look like a failure. Why didn't you move up? Well, because I'm committing, I'm surrendering my plans to God. And I'm succeeding right here. And you'll see that maybe it's not about money. Maybe it's not about stuff. Like there's all these things that we think. Maybe it's not about happiness. Because I know if you have been following Jesus for more than a year, you have probably been in a moment where you look back and you'd never do it again. But it was that dark moment, that hard time that God used to grow you exponentially. And I was just talking with someone about that a few weeks ago, just about the beginning of MC3 and kind of the hard that was and the difficulty. And I would never, the hatred that some people threw at me, I would never trade that for what God is doing now. And on the other side of that, we got to see love. I remember Kirk and Hannah were just always there. Guys, we're here. Guys, we love you. I think they gave us flowers. Now they're up on me too. But I wouldn't trade those moments. Why? Because God is using that. And so this idea of success might not look the way our world says that. So over in Romans chapter 8, you probably have heard this verse many times, even if you don't go to church. He says, and we know that God causes everything to work together. And people often will read the first part. God causes everything to work together for good. And just stop there, which is cropped. That passage is often cropped and cut off, not reading the whole context. And we did a whole series called Cropped, where we talked, this one of the weeks, we talked about this verse in particular. But this idea, oh, God works everything to good. Well, but you cut it off. It goes on to say, for those who love God, and get this, for those who love God, meaning those whose motives are where they should be, and who are called according to his purpose for them. So not just their motives, but their plans. So everything works if you're willing to say, God, the reason I'm doing what I'm doing is because I love you. And it also works if you're saying, God, I'm doing this because this is what you've called me to do. And if God, if God has called you to something, that's where you want to go. It might not be comfortable, it might not be easy. And on the flip side, if you try to do something good, like some of you be like, oh, you know, I want to come up on stage and teach. And if that's not your gift, it would be awful. And that's not because you're not a good person. That's not because you're trying to honor God. It's because that's not what you're called to do. And there are definitely things that I am not called to do. And it's just not because they're not noble things. But it's just because that's not where God has gifted me. And so the whole point here is that just give it all to God. And then God will bring it all together. And again, for good. And that good in God's eyes is different from what it looks like in our eyes. So you can't outplan God. You can't mislead God. Therefore, submit your plans and your motives to God, and you will truly succeed. That is how to really succeed. So we need to wise up and look within. And I want to bring you three back up. You guys come on up here again. I want you to do something for me. Oh, wow, this mirror is really dirty. It looked cleaner when I cleaned it. I would like you three to come up and look at yourselves in the mirror. Okay? Oh, sorry. I can raise it up here. I'll raise it up so you can... I can't raise it up. It'll break. You'll have to just kneel down. Squat down there. Okay, so look at yourself in the mirror up close, okay? Real close. Closer, closer. Can you go that way a little bit, Michaela, just to give you guys a little more room? There you go. Okay, now I wanted you to do something for me. Without looking, how many teeth do you have? You ever think about it? Do you look at your teeth in the mirror? Do you ever see yourself in the mirror? You brush your teeth? Yeah, you brush your teeth. Okay. So I want you to real quick, tell me how many teeth you get. Look in the mirror and count. How many? Do you guys know how many teeth you have? 32? Someone say that? Is that like, isn't it like an official number? Like a normal American adult has 32? Is that a fact or just a guess? Not letting the cat out of the bag. I know I have two less because I still have a baby tooth that they had to file down. It was awesome. What do you think? 30? Okay. About 30? Yeah, give or take. What do you have? 20? Okay. You probably have more than that. Probably have more than that. Okay. Google says 32. Well, Google is always right. All right. Here's another question. Look at your eyes. Look closely at your eyes. Well, actually, don't look at your eyes. Let me ask you. What color are your eyes? Do you know what color your eyes are? Brown? Blue? Okay. Now, look closely at your eyes. Tell me if you see other colors in your eyes. Yeah, you see black and white? Like, you see some green in there? Yeah. So, like, if we look at ourselves, we can see other things. Do you guys have freckles? Anybody have freckles on your face? Look in the mirror. I know it, like, sometimes in the summer, the sun comes out, you'll get some freckles. All right. Hey, here's another question for you. Are your earlobes attached or detached? See, my earlobes are detached. They're not connected to the side of my head. Have you ever looked at that? Look and tell me, are yours detached or attached? I would say that's detached. Yeah, yours are detached. Let me see, Michaela. Oh, I think yours are attached. They're kind of attached in there. So, like, there's a lot of things that perhaps we don't notice if we don't take the time to look. So thank you guys. That was an excellent demonstration to show them that we need to look. You guys can have a seat again. Thank you very much. And I wouldn't have had enough mirror for 9 people. But again, when you look at yourself in the mirror, do you know the answer to those questions? Like, I really don't know how many teeth I had. I know I had some pulled, some were filed down. You know, do you have freckles? That depending on the time of year, are your earlobes attached or detached? Like, there's a lot of things that have been in front of us literally all of our lives, and we don't see them because we don't take the time to look within, to look harder. And that's what I want to talk about as we kind of apply all this. I want to talk about looking within, and I mean really look. Don't just assume that the reason you do something is a good reason. Don't just be like, well, okay, because I know that that's how they did it, and so that's my reason is okay. Because it's really important to look within deeply, because again, if you think that your plans are going to go around God, you're wrong. And if you think the way you look, your motives are always pure, you're also wrong. Because God knows all of the things that are deep within our heart. And so before we start trying to live away and go, well, why didn't this turn out the way I wanted? Because you're not trying to follow and submit and roll into God's plan. So looking within. So here's a couple of thoughts. A bunch of thoughts with one big concept. And the question is this. Do my motives line up with my actions? This is a question that you need to ask. You need to look deeply and say, do my motives line up with my actions? Are the things that I'm doing motivated by the right things? Or am I just doing them to look good or to earn God's favor or whatever? But do your motives line up with your actions? Because the only way you're going to be able to determine that is to take the time to look within, to really look. And again, we're not going to get it right because we're sinners. We're sinful humans, and Jesus died for us. He knows that. But again, trying to say, I want to live my life. If you want to succeed, as the writer of Proverbs said, it's a matter of saying, God, I want to give you not just my actions, but my motives, the why behind what I'm doing. And so I have a couple of passages just to consider here. So one question is, do my motives line up with my actions in my worship? When it comes to showing up here, when it comes to reading your Bible, when it comes to prayer, I mean, basically a lot of things that we talked about during the On Fire series just a couple months ago. But do your actions, do your motives line up with your actions? Why are you doing what you're doing? Do you come here and do you just sing a song because the words are on the screen, or do you recognize that it's a chance, as we said during On Fire, to pour out your heart? And we looked at this passage actually during that series too. And this is Jesus talking to some of his followers. Well, not his followers, but the Pharisees, the religious leaders that looked like they were doing the right thing. All the outward appearance of what they were looked good. They were so spiritual. They were so godly and so holy. But Jesus says, you hypocrites. He calls them hypocrites, which is not a very nice word now to call someone, and it wasn't to call them then either. He says, Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you. And this is a quote from the book of Isaiah. He says, these people honor me with their lips. Their actions are the words. Their actions are showing up on a Sunday morning. Their actions are reading their Bible. Their actions are singing the words of the songs. He says, but their hearts are far from me. He says, there's a motive problem here. What you're doing on the outside doesn't count if your heart isn't in it. He says, their worship is a farce, for they teach man-made ideas as commands from God. He says, their worship is wrong. So why do you come to church? Why do you sing the songs? Why do you spend time in personal devotions or in quiet time or whatever you want to call that, if you do? And you should. What's the why? I'm slowly reading this book, The Pursuit of God by Tozer. Actually, I picked it up to, it's a classic from a long time ago. I think it was the 49 is when it was written, 1949. I picked it up to kind of get some thoughts going for the On Fire series a few months ago. But I thought it was a really interesting quote I just read this past week. And of course, again, he's writing in 1949. So think about 1949 versus technology today. Okay, he says, a generation of Christians reared among push buttons and automatic machines, because they had automatic machines. A generation of Christians reared among push buttons, automatic machines, is impatient of slower and less direct methods of reaching their goals. He says, we have been trying to apply machine age methods to our relations with God. We read our chapter, have our short devotions, and rush away, hoping to make up for a deep inward bankruptcy by attending another gospel meeting or listening to another thrilling story told by a religious adventurer lately returned from afar. He says, we want the quick fix. And we're like, okay, I'm going to do this thing real quick. And he's like, no. Sometimes we just need to take the time and say, why am I reading this? Maybe there's something we can learn from this passage. Maybe there's something that God wants to teach us as we pray. So the question again is, do my motives line up with my actions and my worship? Are my lips doing the things, but is my heart far from God? The second question, that's in my worship. There we go. The second question is, do my motives line up with my actions in my standards? Like, what are the standards that God has given us? It is His Word. 66 books, we can talk about that some other time. And actually, later in the fall, we'll talk about all 66 books. But how much have we allowed the world's standards to determine how we see things or why we do something? And, you know, Sean has said this so many times before. And you have this idea, well, I said this horrible thing to them, but they deserved it. And you post that on Facebook, because do people use that anymore? I don't know. You post it on Instagram or whatever. And your friends are all like, oh, that's okay, hon. He deserved that. Like, and that whole idea, like, we can get that people to support us, even though it might be the wrong thing. And so the question is, what is guiding our standards? And we did a series called After God, where we looked at the life of David, and that's on the slideshow loop where you can go back and listen to that series from a while back. But there's this moment where Samuel, who's a prophet, God goes to Samuel and says, Samuel, I want you to choose the new king of Israel. The king was Saul. You're looking for the next one. And ultimately, spoiler alert, it was David. And so he goes to the family of David. Jesse is David's dad. All the people, all Jesse's kids. And he goes to them and shows up, and the oldest kid is like, he is buff, he is tan, he is everything that a good king should be. He is tall, he is the man. And Samuel actually says, God, this is him, right? This is totally him. And it goes in verse 6-7 of chapter 16. It says, but the Lord said to Samuel, don't judge by his appearance or height, for I have rejected him. The Lord doesn't see things the way you see them. He says, people judge by outward appearances, but the Lord looks at the heart. And so the question is, do you let the world's standards, where, oh, their height, their size, their wealth, their whatever, or your own, this is why I do what I do, because I need to move up in life, because I need to get more, because I need to have a better relationship. I know Justin and Steph talked about that last week. It's time to go to wife 2.0 because this one's not good enough. Like, what is your standard? Because the world's standards aren't good. God's looking at the heart. And again, do our motives and our actions line up with God's standards? Are we looking at the heart or are we looking at the outward appearance? Because that's how God is looking at people. And of course, if you think about it, society's standards change so quickly. They're constantly changing. What's right and what's not right? This is in, this is popular, this is not popular. You can say this, now you can't say that. You should do this, now you can't do that. You shouldn't do this, but now you should. Like, it's crazy. And so it's really difficult to keep up with that whole thing anyway. But if we say, no, what are God's standards? Let's see what God has to say, because it's not about the outward appearance. It's about the heart. The third question, do my motives line up with my actions in my relationships? How do you treat other people? In Romans chapter 12, Paul writes this to the church in Rome. He says, because the privilege and authority God has given me, I give each of these this morning. He says, this is from God, it's not from me. He says, don't think you are better than you really are. Don't think you're better than you really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourself. He says, wise up and look within. Be honest in the way you look at yourself, measuring yourselves by the faith that God has given us. Like, you're not better than someone else around you. The only thing that makes you who you are is because what God has given to you, what God has created in you, who God has made you. And Chris is going to be talking about that in September in our Called to Care series. And the only reason they are who they are is because God has created them and God has made them. He says, don't think you're more important. Don't think you're better than you are. And so when you're with other people, do you act that way? Do your actions line up? Do your motives say, no, the reason I'm ignoring you is because I think that I'm better than you? That's essentially what it is. Is your phone somehow more important than the person that's in front of you? Because by ignoring that person, you're communicating, well, I am more important and what I have going on here is more important. And it's definitely important that I keep scrolling through all those TikTok videos. Or the way you treat other people. Do you treat them as someone who is loved and created by God? Or someone that is a footstool to get where you want? Are they someone to give you the pleasure that you can get out of the moment? So we need to make sure that our motives and our actions are lining up in our relationships. Don't think you're better than you really are, but consider others the way God sees them. And then finally, do my motives and my line up with my actions for my eternity? And this is a scary one. This is a scary one. Because a lot of times we think that, okay, yeah, I went to church. I'm going to heaven. I'm gooder than most other people, so I'm going to be in eternity with heaven, or with God in heaven. And of course, the alternative is eternity in hell, separated from God. And we did a whole series called Burn where we talked about that. But here's what Jesus says, and this is scary, and it should be scary. Jesus says to his followers, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. So he just said that there's people that have actions. They're like, oh, Lord, Lord, yeah, you're my Lord. I'm going to say Lord. I'm going to keep saying Lord. But the way I live is not following you. But my motives are not honoring to you. I'm not actually doing your will. I'm trying to do my plan, not your plan. I'm trying to outplan God, and my motives aren't there. And he says, those people, they think they're going to heaven. He goes on and says, many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And in your name drive out demons? And in your name perform many miracles? Lord, didn't I go to church like 6 times a year? I was totally there on Easter and Christmas. I read my Bible 4 times this past month. Come on, Lord. I was nice to my neighbor. I wear a cross around my neck. Like, we have all these outward things. Like, yeah, God, that's enough to get into heaven, right? And Jesus says, I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. And again, what Jesus is saying is not we should all freak out. But he says we should examine our motives. Do you believe that you're going to go to heaven because you're a good person? I hate to burst your bubble. You're not a good person. You're a sinner. We're all sinners. We all fall short of God's standard. Do you think you're going to go to heaven because you go to church a lot, or not enough, or some? The only way, and Jesus said it, I am the way, the truth and the life is through believing in Jesus' death on the cross for your sin. There's nothing you can do to earn it. And we said this so many times. There's nothing you can do to make God love you more. There's nothing you can do to make God love you less. And so this is a scary thing because there are people that are doing actions that we think, oh, I'm totally going to be in heaven. And Jesus is going to say, like, no, you're not. I don't even know who you are. You were just going through the motions, but your motives, your heart wasn't with me. You didn't believe in what I've done on the cross for you. Just away from me. Like, I'm not going to call you my friend. I mean, it'd be like, I don't know. Let's pick someone famous. Chris Martin, he's popular right now. Lead singer of Coldplay. If you follow him on Instagram or if you watch, you know, his heart cams or whatever. But if you were to go to a concert, okay, a Coldplay concert, Chris Martin is there, and be like, hey, Chris, it's me, Sean. I follow you on Instagram. Can I come backstage? He'd be like, I don't know you. He's like, I don't know you. And there's sometimes weird people are like, oh, if I go through these motions, then that's going to get me into heaven. And it's only through the death of Jesus. Belief, simply belief. Ephesians, Paul says to the church in Ephesus, it's by grace you're saved. You don't deserve it. It's only through faith, not by doing anything. So the actions don't even matter. It's about the heart. It's about the motives. And if you want to talk more about that, you certainly, please pull me aside. A couple of the other guys, the elders that have been teaching this month, you could talk to them. Maybe someone that you came with, if you have a question about that. This is kind of important to ignore because it's such a big deal. And so the questions that we need to ask when it comes to look within and really look is, what is it like? What are my motives? What is going on in my heart? Do my motives line up with my actions and my worship? Do my motives line up with my actions and my standards? Do my motives line up with my actions and my relationships? And do my motives line up with my actions for my eternity? Because the writer of Proverbs here is saying that we need to wise up and look within. What is the reason behind why we're doing what we're doing? What is the reason behind why you are doing what you're doing? And I don't even mean it like a big picture, like, you know, what is your life goal for 10 years? But like in maybe 10 minutes when we're done, and you're driving home, what is the reason behind why you did what you did to that person in traffic? What is the reason behind why you said what you did to that person sitting in the back seat of your car? Like, those motives are what mattered. Let's wise up and look within. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word. Thank you for the Proverbs and just the wisdom that is there. And I pray that you would help us. And I know that this isn't easy. You've already clearly said that according to our own eyes, our ways seem right, but they're not. And it might even lead to death. And so, God, I just pray that you would open our eyes to really look within to why we do what we're doing, to the motives, to the meaning behind our actions, to the meaning behind our movements, that we would honor you and that we would roll ourselves over into you, just submit and allow you to completely cover us and take over. God, help us to see the areas that are so easy to miss in the mirror. Help us to know the things that perhaps, like the number of teeth or how many freckles we have, help us to see the things that are really going on behind why we're doing what we're doing. We pray that you would open our eyes to that so that we can roll it over and submit it to you and then truly succeed. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.